It's Mark's miserable, marvelous May. It's Mark's miserable, marvelous May. M-A-R-C, miserable, marvelous. M-A-R-C, miserable, marvelous. M-A-Y. Music. That sound like Dolph? I don't know.
Welcome to the New World Pictures podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I still regret that you invited me to this podcast.
And Erica, you invited us. You started this. Don't you switch it over. Don't you try to retcon. Retcon like they would in a comic book. And Erica.
Oh, you're going to pay for your thoughts against this movie, Mark.
That's right, Mark. Is in a bad mood, of course, because we are in the midst of Mark's Miserable Marvelous May 2, More Miserable, Part 2, where we are talking about the movies released by New World Pictures at the time where they owned Marvel in the late 80s. And Mark is not a fan of superhero movies.
Nope.
But Mark, the light is at the end of the tunnel, okay? We've got this
the
one.
The sewer tunnel?
A ranking. The sewer tunnel. We're coming out the end of the sewer tunnel, Mark. And we're just going to be right up there in front of a carnival in no time at all. We're nothing but kidnapped children. But, you're going to love it.
But I have to watch 5 more superhero movies before the next
episode.
Oh,
sure. Yeah, there's a ranking of all the 70s and 80s MCU. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of movies to watch there. But I mean... And then you don't have to worry about it for another year. I mean, isn't that great?
No, it's not. Because what matters is what's happening now. Tomorrow is not guaranteed, Ryan.
Well, ooh, so Mark, strap that's in, everyone. Dark. Joining us for this episode, you will remember him from our episodes on Tough Turf, Hellraiser, and Dead Heat. He is now going to be the Mark Goldblatt aficionado. Let's welcome back to the show, Justin Graham.
Thank you. Contrary to Mark, I'm actually really, really happy to be here for this episode.
Yes, this is one of your favorites, right, Justin?
This is not only one of my favorite New Worlds, it's one of my favorite movies ever.
Okay, oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
So this is right up there with... Michael Mann's Heat.
That's in the top 5. If you've true statement there.
Okay, very good.
So, just to be clear, this is not a Convince Me episode, or is it a Convince Me episode?
This whole month has been a Convince Me episode.
But I feel like this one in particular.
C-O-N-V-I-N-C-E, Mark. C-O-N-V-I-N-C-E.
Doesn't flow quite as well.
Yeah, it's not quite. I might also be misspelling it. I don't know.
Yeah.
If anything, maybe we can convince him to see the additional cut.
Ooh.
Maybe.
All right. Well, I'm here to listen and be objective.
I highly doubt that. I don't believe you. You're a liar.
He's a liar.
As we know from Breaker Brent. Of course,
Breaker Brent.
The reason Mark's upset and the reason Justin is here is for us to discuss 1989's The Punisher.
If society won't punish the guilty, he will.
Hey, You see this board here? Every time he kills somebody, I put a red pin in it. So far, the only thing that I've got to show for it is these little calling cards here and a whole bunch of these. Now, let me tell you something about this Punisher. If he ever shows up within 1,000 yards of me, he'll find out what the word punished really means.
He defends the innocent. But if you're guilty, he gives no warning and shows no mercy.
What the hell is this?
Trouble. Dolph Lundgren, Louis Gossett Jr.
Mr. P, happy hunting!
The Punisher. Justice with a vengeance.
That's the best district attorney campaign commercial ever.
That's right, 1989's The Punisher, brought to you by City Bus. Traffic is the disease, and the bus is the cure. Great for transporting kidnapped children, street chases, and ramming through all manner of traffic because buses are indestructible. Okay, the windows are shit, but everything else was made to last forever. The next time you need a ride, don't forget to take City Bus. Have a nice day.
I thought Quaker Oats was the original sponsor.
They were last month when we did our op center. We definitely had Quaker.
I know you did.
This is based on the comic book character, of course, created by writer Jerry Conway, artist John Romita Sr., and Ross Andrew. Punisher made his first appearance in 1974 in The Amazing Spider-Man number 129. But we're talking about the film, which is the first of many Punisher movie adaptations.
And the this best. One is,
and arguably the best. Mark, have you seen the other adaptations?
No, I haven't.
Just the Netflix series? Just the Netflix?
Not that either.
Nope. Okay.
Nope. Uh-uh. No, how the fuck did Academy Award winner Louis Gossett Jr. get second fucking billing to Dolph Lundgren?
Yeah.
How?
Oh, because he wasn't Punisher.
Mark, you'd make a great Hollywood agent with that question.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I mean, he was coming right off of Iron Eagle 2. I mean, damn, he was hot at the time.
He was.
He was a commodity.
This was directed by Mark Goldblatt, who had a long career at New World. He was a PA on Eat My Dust and Hollywood Boulevard before becoming an editor on movies like Humanoids from the Deep and Piranha. And then he moved on to Cannon's Enter the Ninja and then followed Joe Dante out of New World with The Howling and then goes into terror films that you may or may not know, like The Terminator, Rambo, First Blood Part 2, Commando, does second unit work on RoboCop, and returns to New World for Dead Heat, which we talked with Justin about. And based on his work on that, New World signed him up for The Punisher, which initially he turned down. He didn't want to do. He was like, nah, I don't know. I'm not feeling The Punisher. I wasn't familiar with the comic book. But they went to another director. He turned it down. They went back to Mark, and he said, you know what? Let's do it. This is his last directorial effort, not just for New World, but in general. And he just goes back to editing, and he edited little indies like Terminator 2, True Lies, Showgirls, and most recently the Death Wish remake.
Oh, never heard of those. So never. I guess he didn't go anywhere. That's a shame.
Guess his career really fell off a cliff. I'm so sorry. So sorry for him. Again, we just like we said in Dead Heat, Mark, if you're listening, please come on the show. We would love to talk.
Yeah, Mark, come on.
Come on. Not our Mark, but Mark yeah. Goldblatt.
Oh, he can take my place. That's fine. Please,
yeah,
Mark.
Tap Mark out.
I've got a seat ready for you. All the equipment's here. Come on. Let's do
or at
this.
The very least, he could just edit an episode for us. I mean, that'd be pretty cool.
That would be great.
Why not?
This is written by Boaz Yakin with his first screenplay. He would go on to write movies such as The Rookie, Now You See Me, and most recently, The Harder They Fall. There were also uncredited rewrites by the producer, Robert Mark Kamen, who wrote the Karate Kid movies, the Transporter movies, the Taken movies. He had just signed a development deal with New World in 1987, and he told Comic Scene Magazine in 1989, he said, "What attracted me to the Punisher was that he was not a superhero. He was this human being who had been roughed up by fate, cast up on the shore and left to find his own way. Take away the suit with a skull on it, and you end up with a very tormented, yet very human being." And that is fascinating. And they did take away the skull on his shirt.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was about to ask. There was a skull on his shirt?
No, they said, he said, "Take it away. Take it away."
Oh, yeah. Got it.
Yeah, and they did. And it is the one regret Mark Goldblatt has is that they didn't keep the skull shirt.
The only. Well, he has no other regrets.
The biggest. The biggest.
Oh, okay.
The only in his life. Everything else was
Mark,
so sailing.
Come on the episode. Come on the show and explain your regrets.
That's right. That's all I want to hear. What do you regret?
That's all we want to know.
Justin, did you see this in the movie theater? No, you didn't. You couldn't have. It would have been impossible. It did not come out theatrically in the United States.
The trailer, though, did.
Mm-hmm.
They did run trailers for it in the United States, and I was, like, shitting my pants when I saw the trailer, waiting with bated breath for this thing to come out, but we'll get into what happened with that later. But it was one of the best fucking movie trailers ever when you're 15 years old, too.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good, especially the Punisher was an extremely popular character at the time. So it makes sense that they would make this. And this is one of the absolute first comic book adaptations in a year where they started making a bunch of these. Of course, most famously, Batman, of course, comes out in 1989 as well. But this stars Dolph Lundgren of Rocky IV and Masters of the Universe fame. And if I recall correctly, and so Justin, I'm looking to you because I know Mark does not remember any of this, but I remember Dolph Lundgren being rather controversial as a choice. People were like, "What? Him for the Punisher?"
I don't remember that, actually. He had done Red Scorpion right before this.
Correct.
And so he had, you know, he had Rocky, he had Red Scorpion, and I don't remember anyone complaining, at least in my inner circle at the time, which was, you know, high-level units of society at that point in my life. We're talking about the movers and shakers of Hollywood and government.
Only the best people are referred to as high-level units. So that all tracks. He was a big star, though, at the time, Dolph Lundgren. But as Justin was mentioning, Red Scorpion, when New World folded, and this movie was bought by Live Entertainment, which is now Lionsgate, Mark Goldblatt said in the commentary they did not want to release it in the U.S. following Lundgren's 1988 movie, excuse me, Red Scorpion, because that was not a big box office success. So they were a little tentative to want to then put it out in movie theaters. 1990s.
Hold on, just really quickly. Was Red Scorpion poorly marketed, or was it a shit movie?
It's a great fucking movie.
Shit. Of course you own it. Why did I
pretty
even
fun.
Ask?
Pretty fun. But I have a lot of the Dolph Lundgren 90s movies because, I mean...
I was also going to say, Ryan owning a movie doesn't mean that it's a good movie.
Yeah,
it just means
good call.
He owns it.
Good call.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right.
That's fair.
Justin, what did you think of Red Scorpion?
I love it. It's a fantastic film. The unrated version's awesome. It's got so much extra violence.
See? There you go. I don't know. What else do you need? But it unfortunately kept this movie from going to theaters. Lundgren's 1999 movie, I Come in Peace, a.k.a. Dark Angel, was also not a box office success. Lundgren's star, however, would rise again in 1992 with the release of Universal Soldier. Also starring in this movie, as Mark said, second billed, the late, great Louis Gossett Jr. I mean, if there's any, we're not in things we hated. But I feel like, anyway, I'll save it.
You hated that he died?
Yes. I am very sad that he passed away. But anyway, I'm mad at that, you know, well, for one, this is about the only movie we'll talk about, Louis Gossett Jr. from New World Pictures. So that's sad. But also that, as we will explain in a second, that there wasn't more of Louis Gossett in this movie. But he had recently appeared in The Principal and Iron Eagle 2, as Mark pointed out. He would work with Lundgren again right away in 1991's Cover Up, which also went straight to video and is kind of underseen. Have you ever seen that one, Justin?
I have not. I've never even heard of that one.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad.
I haven't seen it either, Ryan.
Okay. Thank you,
Erica. As if you're keeping score.
I haven't seen it either, so I'll just go ahead and throw that
I'm
out
the
there.
Only one. Well,
you're going to get, I think I'm smelling a separate podcast here for Cover Up, like a Cover Up podcast. Like 4 years worth of episodes about Cover Up. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, a little makes spin-off sense. Action? Makes sense. If we, hey, we've milked this one this long. We might as well milk the Cover Up podcast. Gossett, as Mark had mentioned, he already won an Academy Award for An Officer and a Gentleman in 1982. So he was doing very well. Great in Enemy Mine. So many good movies that he came out with. And later on would be in Digstown, one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Mark's favorites as well.
Yeah.
Eric, have you seen Digstown? Movie. Have I shown you Digstown? I don't know if I've shown that to you yet.
That's not ringing any bells.
Where are
I
you?
I can't remember every single movie you've ever shown me, Ryan. That's impossible. That's what you are for. It's your job to remember every movie.
That's fair. That's fair. Here's where you can watch The Punisher. It is on YouTube, but there is also there are Blu-rays. Justin had his German Blu-ray. I have the Umbrella Australian import Blu-ray, which I do believe is now out of print, this one. So,
is yours out of print, Justin?
No, mine's from Koch Media. I believe it's still in print.
But I think they have basically about the same stuff on it. You get the unrated cut, you get the regular cut, you get the work print, and some other extras. So I would highly recommend picking that up if you can't get it for a good price. But
which cut has the most butt cheeks? That's the cut people should get. The cut with the most butt.
I'll have to say the unrated cut will have more butt because they reuse the same butt shot that they use. The work print only has one butt shot, I believe. Plus, you can see a little. This doesn't really have a titty count.
We aren't to things we loved yet. There's not a titty count, but
obviously Erica loves plumber's crack.
I mean, on the right plumber.
Let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is The Punisher about?
Oh, this was a tough one. Tommy grew up with everything a boy could want. Nice cars, a good school, a big house. But the one thing he could never have was the love of his father. Now Tommy's running with the wrong crowd. He's seen death. Can he reconcile his bad choices and capture the love of his father before it's too late? He has one last chance, and that chance is at the Yakuza Night Zoo.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Night Zoo?
Still talking about Night Zoo.
We fit it in. Justin, what is The Punisher about?
I mean, what can I say? But The Punisher is about taking the law into your own hands and being a badass vigilante and ridding the city of crime. Basically, taking on everyone in the world. Responsible for icing your entire family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who wouldn't want to take down the entire criminal underworld after getting your entire family iced by what seems like an endless array of Italian mob bosses?
Bottomless.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Bottomless mob bosses Sunday. See you there, Erica.
I'm in.
Yeah, what a cafe that is. Erica, what is The Punisher about?
Every now and then there's a guy who gets his feelings hurt, then he goes into the sewer, and that's where he lives, and he likes to fight crime, and he rides his motorcycle in the sewer. How do you still look hunky in the sewer? How are you so clean? You live in the sewer. Have you met the Ninja Turtles in the sewer? It was a musical, right?
It is now.
Shouldn't it be?
There is an unusual amount of lyrical prose in this movie, which we'll get to.
Speaking of, this movie is about, with summer stock finished, local theater actor James Shake Shakespeare gets into one wild adventure as he befriends Frank Castle, a lone vigilante trying to take down the criminal underworld. Will he survive to play Henry Higgins in next season's run of My Fair Lady? But let's go to Letterboxd and have their synopsis. Of course, we're on Letterboxd. Are you in Letterboxd, Justin?
I am not.
Okay.
Don't right. start. It's a yep, wormhole. Yeah. Is.
I love your running tally of people that are not on Letterboxd.
It seems to be almost all of our guests are like, nope, never been. Nope.
No.
I know what it is, but I don't have one. I'm not on it.
I don't even think most of them know what it is. They're just trying to be nice.
Yeah, sure. They're like, nope, not on that. Don't even know it. still trying to get all my pictures off my MySpace. The Letterboxd synopsis is this. The Avenging Angel of Marvel Comics fame. I think that I would give that to Angel, the X-Men. But whatever, that's fine.
There's a lot of shit going down that you don't know about.
Speaking of Angel. Fame comes brilliantly to life in this searing action-adventure thriller. Dolph Lundgren stars as Frank Castle, a veteran cop who loses his entire family to a mafia car bomb. His ex-partner believes Castle survived the blast and became the Punisher, living in the sewers and exacting vigilante violence against mob bosses throughout the city. When the populace is caught in the midst of a gang war that he caused, Castle must again emerge from the shadows and save the innocent. All right, well.
And the point of this
not bad.
story is.
So, Justin, before we start, I wanted to ask you, so you saw the trailer when you were younger, you were 15. When did you first see The Punisher? When did you remember the first time you ever watched it?
Yeah, well, what sucks is Starlog did like a whole spread on it, and then there was also a movie tie-in comic, and then the movie never came out. Right. Around 1991, it just appeared on the shelf like magic via Live Entertainment, VHS. And I just saw it on the shelf and couldn't believe I was holding it in my hands at that point. Wow. So I saw it, and it's literally the first week it came on video, 1991.
And did you watch it a few times when you rented it, or just the once, or did you like
a couple times? Yeah, I mean, I bought a used copy a couple months later for like $30, which was like, you know, a fortune in 1992.
Right. Of course, whatever. It's like a king's ransom.
Yeah, that's
but
a lot.
Especially that's for a lot. Pan and scan VHS.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the film was terrific, and a band I liked at the time too, named Biohazard, sampled The Punisher in a big song they had called Punishment. So that was also pretty cool.
Come on, God, answer me. It's years I'm asking you why. Why are the innocent dead and the guilty alive? Where is justice? Where is punishment? Or have you already answered? Have you already said to the world, here is justice, here is punishment, here.
So when you rented it the first time, like, how many days of late fees did you accrue before you returned it?
I'll say two.
That's fair. That's fair.
Nice.
Not
nice.
Too much damage.
I'm impressed. To me, I'm impressed that it, I mean, I know you're a fan, obviously, and are still a fan, but I'm impressed that it made such an impression. Like, you remember seeing it on the, seeing the trailer and then waiting and then finally seeing it. Like, that's...
Well, yeah, I mean, part of it too was it was the death knell of New World too. Once it came out on Live Entertainment Video, you knew that New World wasn't going to put out anything on VHS ever again.
Yeah,
so that's another reason I remembered it as well. And also, just the film was just so dark. It's R-rated. Mm-hmm. I think it's the only R-rated Marvel film ever, and the only Marvel film that it's this dark and insane and violent as well. That has an unrated version even. Think of another Marvel film that has an unrated version with this much violence in it, ever.
The Deadpools?
Yeah, probably not until Deadpool. I was thinking Deadpool, but that's like, you expect that one to be with, you know, I think with Punisher and for the time and place, you know, it's probably...
Yeah, especially with a market that hasn't been, like the current market, it hasn't been saturated with superheroes. So then to open with one that was this violent and sort of dark and, you know, he was an anti-hero, if anything, in terms of the comic books. And so this wasn't opening with like Captain America or Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I mean, there wasn't a Captain America movie in 1990, which we discussed last year. There was.
I'd like to also quickly point out that Justin, I learned that you were lamenting the demise of New World Pictures about 10 to 15 years before anybody else on this podcast.
Right. I mean, you know the moment you were like, oh, they're gone. They're dead.
Oh, yeah. When the film didn't come out, I knew. But then when the video came out on another label, I knew it was really over.
Wow.
So as we start this movie, I'm reminded of a text that Mark sent me because he wrote me about this movie and said, boy, this movie could use a little exposition, to which I asked Justin, do you mind telling Mark what he missed in the work print version, which sets up a whole bunch of exposition?
I would be glad to. So what happened, Mark, is the first 16 minutes of the film that you watched were excised.
Oh.
The work print has 16 minutes before the film starts of where you started watching it with the theatrical version.
Okay.
So just right that off the bat, think of another director's cut that literally has the first 16 minutes of the film just completely cut off the front. This is one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
So a lot of the exposition about what happened and how he got to where he is in that 16 minutes, which in screen time is considerable amount of time.
Yeah, you bet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can only think of maybe Aliens. That kind of set up the whole Newt story in the director's cut.
Right. Mm-hmm. Escape from New York had that major scene where...
The bank robbery,
The bank robbery.
But that was only a couple minutes long, not 16 minutes.
Almost an entire reel they got rid of. So that's almost 8 minutes.
So, and it's a good opening, too, with, you know, you sets up the partnership between Louis Gossett and Dolph Lundgren. It's got a huge shootout, introduces a bit of a kind of an angel, avenging angel quality of New World as well, because they kind of go on a Hooker John sting, which Mark, you know, being an angel and an avenging angel fan as you are, you missed out on that one.
There's a lot of shit going down that you don't know about.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
We've only talked about Angel 3 so far on this podcast, but I think I'm the only one who's seen all the Angel movies at this point. Well, not Angel 4. Mm-hmm. Not seen that one yet.
That'll have to be nearly New World. Nearly New World for that one.
100%. 100%.
Came out on Vidmark.
I love that you know that.
Off the dome.
Off the dome.
That was fresh off the J-Dome. Just want to, distinguish.
Right.
The domes from the J dome.
Right.
Nothing's coming off this empty hollow noggin.
So does the 16 minutes of exposition, does it explain how he got involved with the mafia gangs, plural?
It does. It's all there. Every answer is there. This is why, I don't know. This is why I'm like, I don't know, Mark, you might end up having to do a little rescreen.
But wouldn't you agree with me that all of that is important to the movie?
Very much so. No, all that stuff should have never been cut out. And it doesn't even add much to the runtime. I mean, it would have been like an hour and 46 instead of 90 minutes. So I don't know why they cut it off. I mean, I know there's a commentary on the disc. I haven't heard the commentary in a little while. Maybe Ryan heard it more recently. But I have no idea why the director cut off the first 16 minutes of the film.
Mark Goldblatt says that he stands by, he only does a commentary on the unrated cut, and he says, I stand by the unrated cut, not the work print, the unrated cut. And he said, this is my version. Now, he doesn't exactly go into detail as to why they cut it out. He does just say that they did cut out all this, but he stands by the unrated version, which is the version you saw, Mark.
Okay.
I would have to say, all due respect to Mark Goldblatt, I think the better version is the work print version. You see him working with Louis Gossett. They go on this sting.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to take down the main mafia bad guy that opens the film. That's mm-hmm. who they then take down, put him in jail. And then when he gets out, that's when the movie that you saw starts.
Right.
But you meet like his family, his kids. Yeah. Louis Gossett is like their uncle, and they all get along, and
got
so they're all friends. So there's like tons of like, it pays off so much more later on in the movie that it's like, it's weird to not have it.
So in other words, if you include that 16 minutes, you have a reason to care about these characters.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take my aversion to Marvel movies aside. This movie starts and I have no reason to care about anyone in this movie.
Sure. Right. Sure.
But I will say it starts off with a fucking bang. And I was for about the first half hour, I was in. I loved the original OG gangster. He was far more intimidating, far more stylish. I thought that he was going to be the bad guy.
Now let me tell you something about this Punisher, whoever he is. If he ever shows up within 1,000 yards of me, he'll find out what the word punished really means.
You have Dolph Dolph Buns in the first 7 minutes. They blow up a friggin' house. I question how he would have survived that. But that aside, they blow up a house.
I also question, and the work print does not solve this, Mark, not to cut you off. But when he runs up to his wife, and it's a much longer scene in the work print, when his wife, the car initially blows up,
mm-hmm.
and he runs over to the window and knocks on it, and it's all on fire, but then it blows up again. And so my question, and I, no matter what, unrated cut, work print, whatever you're watching, he's right by the car when it blows up a second time.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get away unscathed on that one?
I don't know.
Not even a scar on your face, but
I don't know. Evidently that suit that he's wearing is fireproof because
maybe
nothing affects
running
him.
To the car, he threw on that like gel that like stuntmen put on all over themselves when they're in the burn scene.
Everyone has that in their pocket, right?
He just grabbed it out of his pocket and he's running to his wife and just like dousing himself with it. No, honey.
So he's also Mark, the work print uses Hellraiser cues as the film music.
Oh.
Yes. So Christopher Young's Hellraiser score is used in the work print, as well as Lethal Weapon.
You got him,
Weapon.
Justin.
And
you
Lethal
got
Weapon.
And Lethal Weapon.
No kidding.
And Alien. Yep.
We got him on the line.
You're making it so
we
hard.
Got him on the line.
No, Mark, you got New World's Hellraiser score being used in another New World film. This is the first of that happening in New World's history.
Yeah.
Wow. Fans, you can't see. Fans, you can't see Mark's face, but he is on the line. We've got a hook in the lip.
Now, was that just because those were placeholder cues until they got the soundtrack?
Correct. Dennis Draith did the score for the final cut, and it's an amazing score, too. The music in this movie is terrific.
So I think the other thing that I really appreciate is this. Okay, so you have these big explosions. You learn about the Punisher Task Force, which was kind of fucking ridiculous. Like, they created a task force around one person. But that aside, you also learn that the Punisher he's a force, but he's also very patient. Because he's waiting outside a bar for his summer stock informant guy for what?
Mm-hmm.
4 hours with a remote control car, just waiting for this guy to eventually come out of a bar. I would have to assume he had a pocket full of C batteries.
A remote control car and a bottle of whiskey.
Right.
Imagine walking by that guy with two, like a toy and a bottle of unopened whiskey. Just being like, what's up?
Sounds like downtown LA any day of the week these days.
But it's like he wasted all that time waiting when all he would have had to do was just play a few chords of Brigadoon and that guy would have raced out there to the alley.
Hello, Punisher.
I already have a kilt.
But that brings in, once we have that big explosion of that house, brings in Louis Gossett, who is a detective of City. I like to think of this being the exact same as Trial of the Incredible Hulk, which we talked about last week. That it doesn't have a name. It's just City. It's City. He's a detective of City.
Right.
The police cars just say state.
Right.
True. In its defense, so did Seven, so did The Crow. That's used.
Here's the public defender.
So what you're saying, Justin, is that this movie takes place in the same universe as The Crow and Seven. Interesting. But anyway, he is walking around and he runs across Detective Leary, played by Nancy Everhard, who was also in the Trial of the Incredible Hulk.
Yes, she was.
As Matt Murdock's partner at their legal firm.
And Mark, you missed her dressed up as Angel in the work print.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Heels, wig, nice miniskirt. See, I don't know, man. Hook, line, and sinker.
There's a lot of shit going down that you don't know about.
There is, dude. There is. She was cast because of Sean Cunningham of House fame. He had just directed her in Deep Star 6.
right,
and recommended her to Goldblatt. And so initially cast, though, perhaps in her role, this is according to the Punisher 89 book, which is written by Jeremy Demoiseau, who hopefully is going to be putting out the English version. He's been working on it for years now. The English translation of it, hopefully later this year.
Ooh la la.
We will hopefully be talking to him once he gets that going and the book is released. But in any case, he has a picture, and he was saying, I saw one of his posts that he was saying that Nicole Kidman was initially cast in this role.
Oh, wow.
But for reasons I don't know and we would have to ask, she did not continue on with the part.
It makes sense because she was probably living in Australia at the time, too. And this was filmed in Sydney.
Yeah.
So let's hear this clip one. We'll hear them meeting up.
Excuse me, Lieutenant Berkowitz?
Yeah.
I'm Detective Sam Leary.
Sam?
Samantha. I worked with you once, 5 years ago. The Moretti heroin bust. It was my first assignment, plainclothes. I was the hooker.
Oh, right. Well, what can I do for you, Detective?
I'd like a shot at being your partner.
I don't work with a partner.
I know, but you used to.
Right, used to. Past tense.
So what we learned in that scene is that Jake, Louis Gossett Jr.'s character, has never heard of a woman being called Sam before.
Right, yes. First thing is he's like, Sam? A woman being named Sam? That's impossible.
And I know that's the only politically incorrect thing you guys got out of the script. Because this is an 80s screenplay winner for non-political correctness on so many levels.
Yes. Very true. Yes. Very true.
But the other part of it is that made me think, is this how police detectives partner up? They go to the scene of the crime and they go, hey, do you want a partner? Do you want to partner up? I noticed you work in this case, and I was like, I'd work this with you. Is that how that works? I didn't realize that was the case.
Yeah, it's.
Hey, Ryan, it's Janet from HR. You know, just going to have to politely, just professionally request that you just take a step back, stay in your lane, okay? You know, let the police build relationships the way that they can, okay? Thanks so much. Okay, and don't worry, I have those OP Center pencils coming in anytime.
The pencils came back. Oh, they're coming in. Okay, yeah, good. They're on back order. That's fantastic. That's good to know. Good old Janet from the Op Center.
It's good to have her back on the podcast.
It's so good. So good to have her back.
Yeah.
She sounds so different from Erica.
She's so
different.
Yeah,
she does.
This brings us to Gianni Franco. He comes in to settle. He's got to settle the families with Moretti gone. He's played by Dutch actor Jeroen Krabbe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Jeroen is one of those great names that when I was working in Amsterdam at a comedy theater and you had to go get people's names and interview them in front of everybody and you knew you'd have to make up a song or afterwards. What's your name? Jeroen. You're like, okay, great. Got to figure out a rhyme for that. It's not as bad as, what's your name? Gert. I'm like, oh boy. But anyway, Jeroen Krabbe, whom Goldblatt knew from his work in Paul Verhoeven movies, especially Soldier of Orange. But Krabbe broke into American films in Jumpin' Jack Flash and had recently appeared in The Living Daylights and Crossing Delancey. And sadly, this is his only New World movie.
But you'll remember him. You'll remember him as the bad guy in The Fugitive.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yep. Oh, definitely. He's very good in that. And he's now pretty much still back in Holland and he's doing lots of Dutch movies. So he's still working quite a bit, but back in his home country.
I'm smelling some new world or nearly new world coming on here.
How could we fit The Fugitive in there? I don't know. I don't know how we could do it. I'd love to try. But Jeroen comes back to City to bring all the families together, something Punisher learns from his drunken pal Shake. And Shake is played by Barry Otto, who's an Australian actor, who is the father of Australian actress Miranda Otto. And he was the star of 1985's Bliss, which New World put out on video. So we will be eventually talking.
Great. And I have, can't wait.
I have the VHS tape.
I'm sorry you do. I will not be guesting on that one.
No, you're coming back. Hey, it is a favorite of Heather's screenwriter, Daniel Waters. It's one of his favorites.
Hmm. I did not know
he
that.
He loves that movie. That's one of his. He had a list of best movies of 85, and Bliss is up there.
All right, I'll give it a second look.
So Shake, to me, has the distinction in this movie of being just important enough to not be edited out like the entire opening 16 minutes. He does just enough. Because every time we come back to him, I'm like, why is he here? And then he'll just be like, Punisher, you have to go save the children. And you'll be like, oh, right. Okay. That's why he's here. He's like his conscience. Okay.
Maybe. Not only that, but they slip in that he only speaks in lyrical prose. But they don't explain why. In fact, that scene that you're talking about.
That's right. That answer's not there.
They introduce him as just a drunk that is an informant that he picks up with the remote control car and the bottle of whiskey. And when he's being told about the children being kidnapped, suddenly we get into him rhyming everything. I have a clip.
So the boss will have to pay up.
Hey, they will, and all for naught. The children will be sold by the slave trade that they bought. My God, man, don't you see? This is a result of your five-year killing spree. You weakened the fathers to such degrees they couldn't protect their own families.
I punish the guilty.
What? Why?
Damn right he does. But
why did we suddenly insert that? With no explanation.
Mark, you look, the scene ends with him just riding off after that, but later on, without another scene, he goes to save the kids. So say what you will about those rhymes, those sweet rhymes coming from Shake, but they had an effect because he does indeed go to save those kids.
It's the right thing to do and a tasty way to do it.
I mean, he listens. You got those rhymes in and he's like, you know what? Damn it.
Yeah.
Also, just setting the stage for a Punisher musical. 2, 3, 4. Things are getting hot. Get to the sewer. Things are getting hot. Things are getting hot. Get to the sewer. Take off your pants and shirt and underwear. Get to the sewer.
Is this a sequel to Punisher or is this Steaming?
I know. I mean, could be both. Could be both.
Yeah.
Is Punisher in the? Is he in the sewers below the steam baths of Steamin'? I don't know.
I like this.
But I was gonna say, Erica, this whole idea for a musical. This could have saved New World. I mean, this could have.
I don't think so.
I mean,
I don't know. A little night music didn't save them, so.
Well, that was in the late 70s, so that they had plenty of time. They screwed up far beyond that one. Messing with Yarun's mafia balance, though, is
Lady Tanaka.
Played by Kim Miori, who had previously been on 2 seasons of Saint Elsewhere.
She was also in a critical episode of Magnum PI called The 8-Part of the Village. It's one of those stories about Higgins when he was in the war, and she was ended up being on 3 episodes of Magnum PI because that was such like a big part of Higgins' origin story.
This is a great time to mention if you enjoy this podcast, don't forget to give us a 5-star review and then hop on over to our Magnum cast.
Someone could take that the wrong way.
Justin, we hope they do. I've been listening to this Magnum cast for months, and I don't get it. They just seem to be talking about Magnum PI episodes. I don't get it. She's also, as I remember her, she's from the very first Christopher Guest-directed movie, which is the one with Kevin Bacon's called The Big Picture, which also comes out the exact same year.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Well,
not many people do because nobody really knows that movie, but
yep.
Well, but I rented it a whole lot.
I wake up every day thinking about that movie.
You're like, do I have time to watch The Big Picture today? Do I have to work? I have to take care of my family, but can I squeeze in another viewing? But when Yarun refuses to play ball with
Lady Tanaka,
she rounds up all their kids and kidnaps them, holds them for ransom. Meanwhile, the Punisher goes on a killing spree of slot machines in one of the better scenes of the film, where he blows up in a room, just goes hog wild blowing up slot machines.
He's punishing them for not letting people win.
Right, right. And I will say, up to this point, I was honestly and legitimately enjoying this movie. You had a great shootout scene at Worf, and then you had a great shootout scene
City Worf.
Well, I just call it Worf. The people, nobody calls it City Worf anymore.
That's true.
They had the great shootout scene at Casino, but then it introduces the kids. And that's where this movie falls apart for me. These kids, because no child under these circumstances, being kidnapped, being in the midst of shootouts, being in a car chase where they're all on a bus, no child would remain that calm. They are all calm, obedient. They follow direction. Who are these children? That's impossible.
They're the children of mob bosses.
Yeah, they're mafia kids. They're a different breed.
They grew up probably watching their dads execute people in the family living room, Mark.
Well, is that in the director's cut?
It is not.
The work print. No, it's not. But, you know, Justin has a good point. These kids, they grew up. They're hardened because they grew up in city. And city is tough living. Okay? So they've seen some shit.
My dad said if he didn't run from his responsibilities, there wouldn't be this mess.
Bullshit. You're bullshit. Hit him.
The Punisher is captured and put in a torture machine that stretches your back out, which I need desperately. I was like, hook me onto this.
Uh-huh. Isn't that technically an Iron Maiden?
Yeah.
Scream for me, Long Beach.
I mean, put me on it and let's get this thing back aligned. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, it leads to this.
Who sent you?
Batman.
That's right.
But did he have a stuffed up nose during that scene?
He seems to have a stuffed up nose for most of this movie.
They're like, Dolph, here's some tissues. Dolph, can you just
have a
just
head
give that?
Cold.
He's got sewer throat.
That's right.
That's why he was always doing steam at the end. He was trying to just open up those sinuses.
That's right. And good naked steam at your little altar. Yeah.
Everybody knows when you're congested that the best way to cure it is nude steaming.
You handle your own pain very well.
The part that I love about that scene is
Lady Tanaka
is there for 5 to 7 minutes during this torture, trying to get information out of the Punisher. And then she says,
I have an appointment. I will leave you in the hands of Mr. Ito.
I mean, listen, if I'm in the middle of a very important torture session and I'm potentially running late to a one-on-one, I'm going to be like, hey, hold on. Let me slack this person. Let them know I'm going to be late to our one-on-one because I kind of think this is more important. But she has him on the Iron Maiden. She's stretching him out. She's ready to get information from him. And she's like, oof, we have an all hands that I got to go to. So
yeah,
I'll be back. That's terrible time management and prioritization on her part.
That is on her daughter, right? Because isn't her daughter the one that handles her schedule? Because that is bad scheduling.
Bad scheduling. Mm-hmm. That's terrible.
Give her a wide amount of time for torturing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Also, who schedules a 7-minute meeting? Do it in blocks of 15 or 30. Come on now.
Well, that's legal billing time. You're going by 6 minutes.
That's true.
So 0.01,
baby.
Tanaka kills more gangsters with the help of an old lady and her Uzi. I love that part where just they have
the people
in the restaurant are the ones that stand up and kill these gangsters, and it happens to be one old lady with an Uzi. Yeah. I was like, man, she's probably the most vicious of them all.
That's the 80s for you, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's par for the course in the 80s.
It's up to the Punisher to save the kids, which he does on the city bus, and he drops them off to the police, who are completely ungrateful to him for doing that, and they arrest him.
Right, right.
Now that just doesn't seem correct.
It doesn't seem right. But what I learned in the scene that followed, which is when he's in jail and Louis Gossett Jr. comes to visit him, is that evidently In Australia, they don't have prison uniforms, so whatever you came in, that's what you get to wear the whole time.
That's right.
It's fine.
That's right.
Just wear what you had on.
Should we have to take off his leather pants? No. We have to, whatever he's wearing, he keeps those on.
Boots? Sure. Keep them on. Why not?
Relax.
Stay a while.
Relax. Yeah. You're in jail now. Chill out. Relax.
They might
it's
be onto something.
It's an unhurried way of life here in prison. Just slow down and...
You've been going 100 miles per hour out there, but in prison we got our own. Now, wait, yeah. Is he in prison or is he in jail, Mark?
Oh, Mark is a jail or prison?
That would be jail, because
that's jail.
Yeah, he's in jail.
It's in a temporary holding, right, but, Justin? Back us up on
right.
This.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's temporary holding.
I appreciate that Sydney Jail has a real Ohana attitude about everything.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yep.
It does. It's all about family there.
Take your fingerprint. They're like, mahalo. Mahalo for breaking the law.
You keep us busy. But the Punisher doesn't save all the kids. He leaves one out of the whole thing. So Yaron kidnaps the Punisher from the police and asks him to save his son. And when the Punisher refuses, he puts a gun to Louis Gossett's head because he's also kidnapped him in this twist of all twists.
A life for a life. I'm not going to ask you twice, Castle. Well.
Okay, I'll do it. But understand, when this is over, you're dead.
Man, that sewer throat, that is...
You're it's dead. It's a serious deal.
But...
All right, just take it easy on me. I've got sewer throat.
It's good, though. It's good for affirmations like, come on, God, I'm asking you why. Why was the wrong guys released theatrically and not the Punisher?
That's right. That's a new world affirmation. They had all the juice for the wrong guys.
I think it's time for things we loved and things we hated. Sewer voice style.
Let's talk about the things we loved, things we hated from the Punisher. Mark, what's something you loved?
I loved the gangster conference room. You have the Venus de Milo sculpture, the shiny chrome ashtrays, the crucifix, because, you know, gangsters are Catholic, and that never goes away.
That's true.
Also, Gianni's popped-up collar with his acid-washed jean jacket. So as they go to do the final battle, that collar never comes down. Because, listen, when you're about to kill 50-plus people, on a what is effectively a suicide mission, that doesn't mean you can't be stylish.
That's right. Yeah.
And Mark, I could see you rocking that outfit.
Thank you. Ooh. Thank you. I think I could too. Yeah. It inspired me. I was like, it's time to sell the old wardrobe and establish a new one.
Halloween is just a few steps away. And by Halloween, I just mean you completely take that wardrobe as your own. Just, it happens to be around Halloween time.
Exactly.
Justin, what is something you loved? Are you ready?
I'm ready. I mean, where do I start? I mean, the look of the film, the fact that it's R-rated and has all that violent action for, like I said, a Marvel film is awesome. Dolph Lundgren is awesome. The outfit, the motorcycle, the amount of machine guns and artillery he has access to. I mean, everything about it, just the whole look of it. I loved it, especially like the red filters used at the end action scenes. Super cinematic and cool, kind of like a comic book. The score, like I said, by Dennis Draith, it's amazing. Hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. That's about it. Things I hated, I mean, the kid thing, like Mark mentioned, with all the kids being kidnapped, you know, a little bit of a slowdown there. But outside of that plot point, you know, also that school bus scene is basically taken out of Clint Eastwood's The Gauntlet. So I think that was a big inspiration for that scene.
Good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Wow. Erica, what's something you loved?
Well, I think it's not going to surprise anybody that I love seeing Dolphy Buns. I love seeing some Dolph buns, some oiled up Nakey Dolph in the sewer. I thought that was great. Because the Punisher is such a like dark, kind of like dirty, like beat up character. But then when you see him, he's like all oiled and perfect looking and not even like bruised or anything. So I thought that was kind of just, yeah, like it was kind of an interesting choice to show like, oh, behind all of the sewer voice and the dark clothes and the boots with like secret knives and stuff like that. It's just like this shiny, perfect guy. You know, he's just a little shiny guy down there.
Erica's crushing.
Yeah,
crushing.
It was crushing. I look, he put it all out there. Even his little nuts were out there. You know,
good to see a little
all there.
Quick
all
peek
there.
At his the bottom of his nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
The lower thirds of his nuts.
Yeah, who wouldn't love that? I guess who wouldn't love to see the lower thirds?
Who wouldn't love that? I love that scuba ninja scene.
Yes.
Because how often do you see a movie that has scuba ninjas?
Yeah, I shouted that when we watched it. I was like, scuba ninjas.
Scuba ninjas. I mean, you can't go wrong with it. The other thing about that whole scene that they do at Pier is that it's interesting.
City
because
Pier, Ryan, please. City Pier.
Well, not everybody calls it that anymore.
No, they call it Wharf, but they do call it City Pier.
Yeah.
But the whole scene has a lot of the lower level mafia guys, and they're all Australian actors because this was shot in Australia. And they're all throughout the movie. You get a lot of actors who are trying to pull off American accents with varying degrees of success. And these guys at this particular scene, there's just a lot of issues. Even Mel Gibson's brother Donal, who plays the gangster who can't figure out the radio.
What?
Yeah,
is his name Donal?
Donal. That is
Donal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Donal? That's his name?
D-O-N-A-L. So Donal Gibson.
Donal?
Plays the... Donal?
Oh, I don't know. Wow. I have no idea.
Donal? It's like Donal Logue, you know that actor?
No.
I'm hearing this name for the first time ever.
From Blade. We talked about him and he was in Blade.
Did we?
So one brother was named Mel and the other was named Donal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but they are all having a hard time with the American accent. But no one goes for the American accent quite like this guy.
Hello, Red One.
Come in.
Red One, will you get off
your ass?
What?
Everything's okay?
Yeah.
What? Yeah! Like, that guy was like, I'm from New York! Like, he was trying real hard. Nobody tried as hard as that guy in the whole movie.
What? Yeah!
He was like, I am nailing this! I am killing it! So I love that. Mark, what's something that you hated?
I hated that it is not feasibly possible in any world or any city like City to fix an elevator that was blown up in 5 minutes just by looking at the circuit board. That is insane.
Well, he's also getting a little pressure from Lewis Gossett.
That's not going to change the fact that you don't fix an elevator just by fixing the circuit board. That was blown up.
What, you think they run on some kind of pulley system?
Yeah. Actually, Ryan, you're going to sit down. We have to talk.
I am.
He crunched elevator repair.
Now, Mark, what if it was a packaged HVAC unit?
It's still... There's going to be damage to gears, bearings, pulleys. The whole thing's fucked. There's no way that pulling out the circuit board and be like, I see the problem, is going to fix that elevator.
I wonder if that's why they didn't release it theatrically, is because of what you just pointed out.
Yeah. During the pre-screening, someone was like, I call bullshit on that scene. They're like, we're not releasing it. We're not. No,
Robert Remy threw his notepad into the air and just said, I give up, and walked out of the screening room.
People out there are going to know about that goddamn circuit board not being able to be repaired in time.
How can we release this? This would be an embarrassment to the company. No, we'll never be able to make another movie. Our reputation will be ruined.
Wah!
Wah! If you can also see his face, like watch that scene if you ever able to, because he is so over with his expression. He's like, wow, like he's
I'm trying to rescreen, dude.
What? Yeah.
Justin, do you have anything else that you hated or something else you loved that you want to throw in here while we're?
I mean, have you guys ever been tempted to yell Frank off a tall building?
Frank.
Frank,
he lives in the sewer, dude. I don't think he's gonna hear you up there.
I also kind of wish that the Punisher had like some sewer groupies down there because it was New World,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know,
I know,
no, totally.
I could have used like a little, you know, little goth club, you know, little industrial action down there with like some cool sidekicks,
yeah,
like in the fishnets with like Uzis and like kicking it with the Punisher in the sewer would have been good, you know, addition New World style.
Even a little cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller, just one of those hanging around.
For sure.
Erica, what's something you hated?
I don't think I hated anything.
No, don't say that. Don't say that.
Oh. Sorry, are you crunching my hate right now?
Sorry, you didn't hear about the circuit board of the elevator?
Mm-hmm. I didn't hate that. I thought that was hilarious.
And the car that exploded that he couldn't have survived from.
Also, you didn't hate
gaps.
You didn't hate that the little girl that lost her teddy bear sounded like the little girl in Power Pack. That didn't bother you at all.
I miss my seagull.
I think what I loved, actually, what I loved most about that, I guess if there's anything to love about. Boy, this is going to sound terrible taken out of context of this podcast. You know what I loved about that child kidnapping scene was...
Don't worry. The media is going to cut this portion out, Erica, and slander you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Was when the one kid, I guess, makes his big move and breaks the chair over her. But then they just like cold clock him in the face, like punch him across the room. I was like, whoa, okay, like, whoa, all right. Yeah,
so it was intense. That's something you hated or?
Yeah, I'm confused.
Oh, loved.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
okay. Because we are on hated, but okay. I mean, if you can't think of anything else you hated, that's fine.
I guess I hated that more kids weren't punched in the face. Boy, that's going to sound weird taken out of context.
I hated that there wasn't enough, as I mentioned, not enough Louis Gossett Jr. And I'll explain more as we get into our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was when... The three gangsters realize that they have all been poisoned from the champagne. Because they do, they all do the like, I gotta undo my tie. it's getting so hot in here. Like, first of all, I think if you're poisoned, I don't think it's undoing your tie is the thing that you're like, ooh, is this collar getting too tight for me?
I'm dying. Let me get a little bit more comfortable.
Right. And then they
get a little bit more business casual before I pass something.
They all followed each other at the exact same time as though they all had the same exact metabolism. And so they all were just like, I guess we're all going.
Mark, have you ever been to Los Burritos?
I have.
Everybody leaves with the same metabolism, buddy.
But I wouldn't. In that case, I'm still not undoing my tie. There are other
issues.
What
I love about movie logic is that that's a movie logic thing where they're always like, somebody's been poisoned. They don't know anything about it until they're like, you've been poisoned. And once they're told, they're like, what? Oh, no. Like, it's like you have to be cognizant of it.
Right.
Like, just being told the word, then it's like, then it activates the poison.
Otherwise,
you guys are no fun. None of you have ever been poisoned before, so.
Yeah.
That's right. Justin, tell us one of your poison stories.
Oh, well, hold on 1 second. Loosen my tie.
But imagine if they did that, if it was accurate. So it was like 20 minutes of them sitting there with these three guys just going like, fuck, I don't feel that good.
Oh,
fuck.
God, I know this is killing me, but I'm still okay. Not good.
No more for me. I feel like those oysters really went down wrong with me. Ooh, are you feeling that way, George? I am.
Lady Tanaka's like, I have an appointment. I have an appointment. I gotta go.
Yeah.
My day is just packed. It's packed.
Sorry, I've got a team stand-up I've got to get to, so I'll be back in, I mean, it shouldn't be long. I'll be back in like 20 minutes or so.
I was given 10 minutes for this, so I just don't have enough time to stick around. I'm so sorry.
Yakuza pickleball.
All right, Justin, your favorite scene?
Definitely the end shootout. Masterpiece. Okay. Epic. I mean, Goldblatt, of course, is going to execute something that awesome. There's about probably 100 deaths in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a whole room of swordplay is taken out with like massive machine gun.
Yep.
I mean, it's tons of swordplay. It's like John Woo-esque, you know? It's like a John Woo-esque ending.
He got a lot of shit, Mark Goldblatt, for having using that red light for the ending scene.
I like that look.
That's the best. That love that red light element. And
I thought it was super cool.
Yeah.
What also delineated like their hideout. That was their whole, their like compound or whatever. So it felt very different from everywhere else in the city.
It's an R-rated Marvel bloodbath in 1989. And it's the only movie that took the risk and had the balls to do that back then. Everything else was PG or PG-13. It wasn't even marketed for kids. I mean, this was an adult action film. It's badass.
It was for adults. That's why kids get punched in the face.
Exactly.
It's for adults and especially parents. This is our movie. Damn, that's gonna sound terrible taken out of context.
Yeah.
You gotta look at it through the prism of 1989, and no one here is gonna have any problem doing that.
Very true.
No one on this podcast.
Right.
That's what I mean. Nobody on this podcast. I pretty much wake up in that prism every day.
Erica, your favorite scene?
Mine was the same as Justin's, just that whole ending sequence with the different fights, and it was awesome. Yeah. Ends with Tanaka gets it in between the eyes with the knife. It was awesome.
Some good stuff in there. And they have a nice extended. This is one part where the work print is a little bit different, is the ending, the very opening and then the ending, which actually, again, I kind of prefer. He doesn't have as long a fight with Jeroen. It ends a little bit faster. It's a little bit longer. That was a reshoot that they did later. They reshot that scene in LA. So my favorite scene is the scene where where Louis Gossett shows his Academy Award winning chops in a movie called The Punisher.
I've been looking for you for 5 years, man. Why the hell didn't you come to me for help?
I didn't need your help.
You're sick, you know that, don't you?
Sewer throat.
What the fuck do you call 125 murders in 5 years?
Huh? Work in progress.
This is no fucking joke here. Today you're going to electrocute you. And there's nothing I can do anything about. But you gotta talk to me, man. Let me in! Let me in! My fucking family too, right? They were my family too. Now let me in, Doctor. Let me in!
Yeah, that whole part about my family too totally lost on me without the context of the
without the context you lose that and it sounds
that's too bad
and it sounds like but he is going for that for opening line of that clip where he's just like, I've been looking at you for 5 years, man. He's got tears in his eyes and you're like, all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, why did the Punisher suddenly get super dramatic and deep? And Gossett goes for it in that scene. He's amazing in that scene. But without the context, it doesn't hit as well. It hits so much better when you actually see he was a part of their family. He was like, they called him uncle. And it was like, then you get to that scene and it has such a bigger payoff. Because you have all that opening scenes.
Right.
I'm not saying that you don't have it in the version that most people have watched. You certainly do. But because Louis Gossett just like forces you into the emotion of that moment. But you've missed all the context. You don't get all the context. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. But it's a terrific scene.
Also, I don't know. This is a little known fact too. Louis Gossett Jr.'s brother, Donald Gossett. He's also a really good actor.
Also very good. Also very good.
He did a lot of dinner theater, but he was also really talented.
I love a good dinner theater.
Oh. Is it Donald or Donal? I forget. I can never pronounce it right.
Yeah, oddly enough, he's also a junior, which is weird.
Yeah, he's also a junior.
I don't know how that works, but...
Although I think that scene that Ryan described, though, with the let me in, I think Ryan and I had that same conversation around 1994 over a bottle of Mad Dog 2020.
Oh my god, that's funny.
I didn't say let me in, I said let me have a sip. So
let me sip. Let me sip.
Let me sip.
I just, my mad dog too. I remember something about a work in progress, but it was a long time ago.
That was both of us at that point in time.
But maybe I might have screamed Ryan off a tall building at the end of that night.
You probably did. But luckily, we're both perfect now, so all that matters. No work in progress now. Nope. Here are some final questions for the Punisher. When the power cuts out at your house, what color is your backup light?
Mauve.
I just hit the mom. Fog machine. I just hit the fog machine on.
So you can't see, and it's smoky in here.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's like a little Bauhaus.
Yeah, it's like a club.
I just quickly rewire the circuit board and the light. I fix it in 5 minutes.
Fix.
I know when my elevator goes out, I'm calling Mark over.
Please don't. I won't be able to solve that problem.
He will only be able to recognize that it can if there's a bad solution. That's all Mark can point out.
I can Mark Goland, Elevator King.
This is not fixable. Okay, see you, man.
Mark just is like, that solution isn't going to work. And then he backs into Justin's smoke machine smoke. They're like, where did he go? Where did that elevator whisperer?
That's why he's the king. We don't know where
the Kaiser Sose of elevator repair people.
Oh, that's a business card, buddy. That's a business card.
He's also an evil murderer. He's probably faking us out with that elevator knowledge. He doesn't have elevator knowledge. Speaking of, let's get into some research. 1988, Dolph Lundgren's announced in May of 88 as being cast in the role. He is the first cast. Then Louis Gossett is cast after him. They say it's going to be shot in July. I believe it's actually shot more around August. It's shot in Sydney, Australia, as Justin pointed out. Anywhere from $10 to $12 million as a budget. I've read 10, 12. I've even read 15. So somewhere in that zone is the amount of money that they spent. Still a lot for New World.
That is a lot.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I think when we discussed Warlock, I think that one was like a $9 million, which was them decidedly trying to up their budgets and make a different movie. In fact, if you think of the movies that they were making right at the end, this, The Punisher, Warlock, Revenge, they were really starting to try to pay off, you know, even back to Corman, he was always like, I'm going to make a movie. And he would announce to the press, I'm going to make this movie, and it's going to be a $5 million movie. And the movie would never get made, and he would never spend that kind of money on a movie. But even the new owners who bought New World from Corman would be like, we're going to make these movies. They're going to be like a 15. We're going to make 20 movies this year, and they're going to have budgets of 9 to 15 million. They never spent that kind of money on movies. But they were starting to. It's just that at that point, you know, they were falling apart. But they were starting to.
In Mark's world, that's a bond rating.
This did get a premiere, and this is something that I knew, because I also knew about The Punisher as well, because the ads for this movie were in comic books. So I knew this was coming out as well, seeing the fact that Marvel Comics were promoting the movie. And then I had learned about its U.S. premiere, which it does have. In April 1991 at the LA Comic Book and Science Fiction Convention, where it has its premiere. And I was like, oh man, I'm in San Diego. I would love to go up to LA and go see that. But I, of course, could not.
Was Betsy Palmer there?
She was not. She was not there.
That was in the adjunct convention center. They were doing a different convention.
Down the road.
Down the road at the Marriott was the Fangoria weekend get together where she was appearing.
Weekend get together. It was you couldn't quite call it a convention.
Yeah. It's
just more of a get together. So also at this convention, along with the premiere of The Punisher, is the 2-hour pilot of the Flash TV series, the same series that CBS was putting out, and they bought out the proposed Daredevil series that New World was going to do for New World Television, and they bought out the contracts. So for that very series, also screening that convention, the pilot to Power Pack.
Oh.
So a busy New World convention.
I miss my Indeed.
This does release on VHS in the U.S. April 25th, 1991 by Live Home Video to a young Justin Grahams who pulled it off the shelf and was like, you're coming home with me. And in a couple months, I'm going to spend $30 and have my very own. At the time, though, he got a good deal because it was when it was released, it was $92.95.
Wow.
That was the
that was new in shrink, though.
Yeah.
Brand new.
I think that's what the German Blu-ray cost me with all the friggin', you know, credit card transaction fees from Germany and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Worth it.
Once it all shook out, once everything was,
But worth every penny.
That's right. Now, this is a movie made by New World Pictures Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the very first, and as far as I know at this point, the last to be made by this subsidiary, which was started in 1987. It said, this article says that NWP Australia has plans to produce, acquire, or invest in 12 to 14 feature films a year, as well as TV programs to be distributed through the U.S. Parents International Network. They basically set up New World Pictures Australia, which is something where they basically went right into the Australian stock market, made the shares available for people to purchase, 60 million 50 cent shares for people to buy up, make a bunch of money. They'd also put a bunch of money in from U.S. New World Pictures. And they were going to make a bunch of pictures, take advantage of the cost of making movies in Australia. And I think in many ways, maybe, this is just a hunch, maybe they were just trying to like put their money over here in Australia and just cook their own books to see how that would work.
Madden.
Basically, the manager of New World Pictures Australia, Richard St. John, he told The Age, our emphasis will be on making movies in Australia for the world market and distributing them through New World USA's well-established international distribution system. This will contribute to Australia's export earnings and help reduce film imports, which now make up 95% of this country's box office takings. So they're going to make a lot of movies for Australia. June of 1987, it was already losing money. And they weren't the only ones to do this. De Laurentiis Entertainment was also doing this as well. But New World's stock price, which was at 50 cents, was already at 38 cents.
Oof.
A 24% loss.
Ooh, too rich for my blood.
38 cents a share? No, thank you. Maybe it started losing money right away because, as this article points out, New World Australia was a 25% share, had a 25% share in four films that were being made by the American New World Pictures. Creepshow 2, The Telephone, House 2, and Sister, Sister.
Wow.
Well, I mean, didn't Creepshow 2 and House 2 make good money?
I think Creepshow 2 did okay.
Define
I think
House 2- good money.
Touche, Justin. Touche.
Yeah. But it loses money, as you can tell, in its first year, and they actually invested more than $15 million in 11 movies in the end of the first year of New World Films. So they also put money into 18 again, into Dead Heat, The Wrong Guys, Warlock, and a movie called Wipeout. which is at when it actually ends up coming out is called Under the Boardwalk.
Okay.
I love that movie.
Wait, I remember you had the poster on your wall. Do you still have that poster?
I don't have the Under the Boardwalk poster, but I have the DVD and I have the LP and I have some press clippings.
Nice. Didn't the wrong guys do well, though?
I certainly hope not.
I think that was on Erica's top five, wasn't it?
I think it was. I love the wrong guys.
Yeah. I don't know. Erica, do some real-time research. I'm not sure if it was a big, how much money it made. I don't know if that one made a ton of money. None of the movies, though, that they made really made a ton of money, which is kind of why they end up getting out of theatrical business, because they didn't really have too many big-time hits.
It says, quick facts, box office, $1.153 million.
So, yeah, not great.
No.
But then again, there's also video, which, of course, was a big help for New World as well. Mm-hmm. They also had, development deals, so these development deals were then canceled as things were not going well for New World Australia. Those, as we will have to do eventually, nearly New Worlds, for a movie called Tracks. Ray Lawrence's script based on Robin Davidson's account of her camel trek across Australia, and Blood Oath, a script by Dennis Whitburn and Brian Williams. And those movies did get made. Blood Oath is made in 1990 with Brian Brown of Breaker Morant and a young Russell Crowe.
Wow.
They eventually get made, I think, in Australia and eventually go to Village Roadshow makes Blood Oath, which ironic because I think Village Roadshow, I think, is the one that owns the rights to most of the New World movies post Corman.
Okay.
Ironically.
Hell of a flea market pickup, if you ask me.
Yeah, exactly. They're scouring the bargain bins. They're like, oh, we'll take that. Tracks takes a little bit longer, but it does finally get made in 2013 with Adam Driver and Mia Wasikowska. So the movie does get made. It's a more recent one, but it does get made. With the development deals canceled, Blood Oath screenwriter Dennis Whitburn said this about New World Australia in 1988. He said, New World are basically still making exploitation movies for kids. I honestly believe they have no intention of doing quality Australian films.
Duh.
I hate to tell you, Dennis, I'm not 100% they were committed to making American quality films. So I hate to tell you. And eventually, New World then buys back the stock at an offer price of 16 cents compared to the 50 cents.
Greed works.
Wow.
And so that's just a brief overview of New World Pictures Australia Limited, which is something that this movie pointed out and I didn't realize existed. But they had all this money, so they had to make some movie. So this is the movie that basically gets made because of New World Pictures Australia.
Purple Horseshoe loves New World Pictures stock. Anacott Steel, baby.
Did you have any other research that you had that I didn't go over or anything from the Punisher?
I lost my cash flow statements from the production.
Wow.
You had cash flow statements?
No. You've covered it, my friend.
Okay. All right. I know you have a lot of stuff in your New World collection.
I have Donald Gibson's canceled check from his last royalty payment framed in my fucking living room.
He might track that down. So look out, buddy. Anything else you want to say about The Punisher before we wrap up, Justin?
Just that it fucking rules, and Mark, watch the work print.
Thank you. I'm almost tempted. Almost.
Will he ever? Who knows? But probably not. But that's it. That is it for The Punisher. Mark, we are coming to the end of your miserable, marvelous May Part 2. I mean, is this exciting? You only have a bunch more movies to talk about next week.
This is like the last 6 miles of a marathon where you're like, seriously? I have 6 more fucking miles?
I still have 6 more miles. God. That's right. It's not over. Justin, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on. It's always good to see you, buddy.
It was a blast. Thank you.
If you want to know more about the podcast, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. You can find all our episodes. You can also buy our t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt. We've seen some sales. We see you out there. Thank you for buying some t-shirts. That would help us out a whole lot, but would also really help us out. Tell your friends about the podcast. Let them know we're having a great time talking about New World Pictures. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast. Bye, everybody.
What? Yeah.